San Diego Center for Spiritual Living, Sunday, February 23rd, 2020. Today's lesson is Tough Love with Reverend Dr. Constance Cook Core. Well, good morning, everyone. Did you know that it is May? No, it's not May. It's February 23rd. February 23rd. It's a great day. It's an excellent day. We are following our annual theme of explorations in consciousness. And last month it was Start Where You Are. This month it is Love Points the Way. So we're moving along on this great explore for the whole year. Next month it's going to be Living in Balance. So you can see we're just taking step by step through this wonderful way of looking within and seeing how that looking within supports us and sustains us in this world in which we are also living the without. Or we're living outside and we're living inside. We're not living without because we are completely with. We are one with the divine. So I'll anchor us as I do every Sunday in this very simple, very profound truth. There is one power, one presence, one infinite intelligence that flows through all creation. And I call this God, the Living Spirit Almighty, one absolute, indestructible, and self-existent cause in which we live and move and have our being. And so let us just simply breathe that in and think about what it really means. It means that there is one, only one. And not only is it the source of all, it is the divine, it is the all in all, it is us. It is you. You are part of that infinite. Because when we think about the infinite, there's nothing else that you could possibly be. I say that often. Maybe it's the mathematic background that I have. But in truth, it was once I understood that all of the faiths across the world look at their source as being infinite, I realized there it's not just that it's infinite, it truly is that there is only one. We call it different things. We behave differently in accordance with the different rules of each organized religion. But within ourselves, and this entire universe, there is still only one life. That life is the life of the source, the life of God, and that life is your life, right here, right now, and always. You are never separated from that life. You can't be. You can't. It can't be, okay, everything, the infinite universe, and you. We're going to separate you off over here. What are we going to separate you into? There's nothing to outside of the godness, the goodness. And so we can't separate anybody. The only way somebody can be separated right here in their brain, they can decide that they are not one with God. It doesn't mean they're not one with God. It means that they are thinking that they are separate. They are thinking that they don't have all of these qualities of God within them. They are thinking that there is something other than God, and that's what they're a part of. Technically, they're wrong, but it doesn't mean that they don't believe it. They still believe what they're going to believe. We don't know better than them. It's not that they're ignorant or they're stupid. they simply believe in something that we know is not the truth, is not spiritual truth. When I was looking at tough love as a category, as a topic, I love it. I truly love tough love because I don't think of it as the kind of tough love as standing up to people. In the 12-step programs, there are people who promote something called tough love. And that has also moved into the psychological realm where we deal with teenagers. And the counselors will say, well, you need to have tough love with your teenager. You know, if they're not coming home on time, they're breaking their curfew, you need to have tough love. And they go, well, what do you call tough love as far as my son's curfew? And they go, well, punish him, isolate him, take away all of his electronics, don't let him interact with society or see TV or anything except while he's at school. And I'm thinking, that's probably how he wound up staying out later than his curfew in the first place, because he'd had so many things to do, he couldn't get around with his friends. So my husband at the time, his dad, and I listened to this group of other parents that we'd gone to one of these support groups and heard about how so many of their children were drinking and doing drugs. They were sure that because our son broke his curfew, that he was drinking and doing drugs. He wasn't. We knew exactly where he was and who he was with, and he just was late, but he was consistently pushing the barriers and trying to see, you know, how much a 16-year-old with his own car could get away with. What I learned through that was something that I have learned again and again, or experienced again and again, and that's that people see things through their own filters. Here's this group of parents trying very hard to help their children, and their children actually do have alcohol and drug problems. And so in order to help us, these newcomers to their group, they want to convince us that we have the same problem they had, that they had to be convinced that they had, because they didn't want to believe it about their child also. And it's like, whoa, round and round and round and round. But something is very clear here. People are going to think what they want to think that serves them. If it serves them to think that every kid with a problem has a drug and alcohol problem, then that means they're okay. They're not alone. There are others just like them in that particular group. That's fine. I was thinking about tough love, and the way I look at tough love is not on the outside, where I have to go out and do something to punish someone that I love, to prove to them that I love them when I am controlling their behavior. That's not how I look at tough love. The way I look at tough love is everything that's going on inside of me. When people are behaving in unloving ways, can I find it in myself to behave in a loving manner without becoming a doormat? You know, a lot of people think, oh, you're a minister, you should put up with everything. No. No way. No, you're a minister. You should be able to see what people are going through and not put yourself in their position for sympathy, but be an example for them with guidance and love and forgiveness and compassion and all these other things that we have for people who are behaving in a manner we would not prefer that they behave. On my notes, I put good and evil. And I was looking at evil and just the way I wrote it, this is something I never noticed before. It's live, spelled backwards. Evil is live, spelled backwards. So I got to thinking about, well, I normally, when I talk about good and evil, I talk about evil being not something of itself, but being the absence of allowing the good or God in our life. The absence of allowing it in our life. It's not the absence of God. Evil is not the absence of God. It's the absence of acknowledging and allowing the influence of the divine and good in our life. Evil, when I think of people and evil, is a sense of void within a person. It's a sense of separation by blocking the consciousness of wholeness. It's misguided self-defense. If I am doing something, doing whatever I'm doing, the only time people do anything bad, in my opinion, is when they are putting up their shields of defense. They feel a need to defend themselves from something or someone that will hurt them, harm them, or take away something that they have. So how do we love someone that is grasping, that is harming others, that is misbehaving, that is doing all of the things that we prefer people don't do? Well, the first thing we do is we look at ourselves and say, just because I prefer people don't do that, doesn't mean they don't have a right to do that. They're going to live their life. They're going to do what they want. They're going to try to navigate becoming loved, being loved in the way that they have learned to survive and to thrive in this world. So what are we going to do? We're going to love them anyway. We don't love the behavior. We love the life within them that is struggling so hard to stay hidden and therefore to stay safe from living down to their unworthiness. Did I just say they're living down to their unworthiness? That's not the truth. That's what they believe. If you truly believe you are unworthy, then in your life you will self-sabotage yourself to prove how unworthy you are. Because what does the universe do? It always says, yes, yes. You believe that you cannot be loved? Yes, we will keep people away from you that can love you. You believe that you are unworthy? Yes. We will make you so unworthy that you will never even dream that you have this divine life within you. That, of course, the universe already knows. But the universe has to say yes to what we put into it. Whenever we look upon people who appear to be difficult to love, I want you to ask yourself the question, what needs healing in me? What needs healing in me? One of the things about people that it's hard to love is they're usually being mean or violent or harmful in some way. This is the season for nonviolence. And during this season of January 3rd to April 4th, we are recognizing and honoring the passive, active resistance of Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King. They were active in protesting in a non-violent way. So they took action by going in marches. They did not take action by throwing rocks and hitting people. They took action, and this is what I love about both of them. They did these things in civil disobedience, peacefully, so that those people in authority then had to enforce the laws that the nonviolent people were protesting. And what it did was it brought into stark relief how horrid the law was. With Gandhi, you can't make salt. Goodness me, you know, you just go down to the ocean, portion out some water, let it dehydrate, and you've got your salt. And yet the British rule was not allowing them to make this element that was, or to gather this element that was essential to life. They beat them. They killed them. They shot them. Without the crowds doing anything harmful, simply being present where they were not wanted to be. They walked to a factory to protest something, and the military came out and beat them and shot them. We had marches in the South for civil rights. People just walking down the street, walking arm in arm, because they realized that if they didn't walk arm in arm, they would be knocked down individually. And what happened? The police, the military, attacked them, jailed them, beat them, when all they were doing was bringing light to unfair practices and unfair laws. So that's why we have this season for nonviolence. Two great men whose deaths were 20 years or 30 years apart. I don't remember exactly. But we honor them for the work that they did to peacefully attempt to bring attention. So today is the 25th day of the season for nonviolence. And I have today's quote up here on the board. For 64 days, and there are 64 ways, we make commitments to daily nonviolence. And I thought this is really cool with my talk on tough love. It says, today, I will constructively channel my anger, frustration, or jealousy into healthy physical activities. For example, doing sit-ups, picking up trash, taking a walk, etc. But I will constructively channel my anger, frustration, or jealousy into healthy physical activities. So if I am claiming that I have anger, frustration, or jealousy, clearly I need to look within. And I need to find a way to be loving without judging. It's when I judge that I become frustrated or jealous. It's when my expectations are not met when I become angry. So these, for me to pick up being angry, frustrated, or jealous, That means I have work to do within me. And boy, somebody might find me hard to love if I am being judgmental, if I am being disrespectful, if I am harming others. Somebody else might find me hard to love. Okay? There are people that I experience their behavior, and I remind myself through my teachings and through my awareness that they are truly lovable. They may think they're not, but they truly are. Everyone is lovable. We can condemn the behavior, but it is beyond the beyond when we start attacking the person. There's a point to me saying this. We can condemn the behavior. We can discuss behavior. But what we always need to remember is that the person who's doing that behavior is one with each of us. If we are all one with the divine, we are all one with each other, we are one with whoever's doing that nasty behavior. And so we can know in our prayers and our treatments that we all are one. And we can always pray for someone's greatest and highest good. When I find someone is annoying me or irritating me, or, you know, I have challenges expressing open and unconditional love toward this person, I always will start praying for their highest good. And there's two reasons for that. When I'm praying for their highest good, it's shifting my consciousness. When I'm praying for their highest good, they usually go away. You know, they find a job in another town, you know, something, but they leave my space. And I have said over time, I'm sure it's because their highest good was never to annoy me. You know, so maybe this annoying behavior was to get me to pray for their highest good. We have an election coming up. The California primary elections are Tuesday, March 3rd. And I would like to ask everyone to do two things. In Science of Mind, we don't teach you what to think. We teach you how to think. So I want to cross that over for the election. I don't want to tell you how to vote. I want to tell you what to vote. What way to vote. Okay? And the other thing is I want you to vote. Please vote. So, not every voter will agree with the words or the actions of every candidate for office. So, here's what I would like you to do, please. If you have nothing good to say about a candidate, say nothing. Because we know where we put our attention is what increases. So if you have nothing good to say about a candidate, don't say anything, don't give them your attention. If you have a candidate that you would like, speak well of that candidate that you have chosen. Because where we give our attention increases. And so when you are giving your good attention and speaking well of the candidate that you have chosen, you have increased their spiritual capability to win. And the third is vote for the candidate you choose. Do not vote against another candidate. If you are choosing a candidate, vote for that candidate. And there is a conscious difference in how you feel when you are voting. So that's what I would like you to do. There are measures and propositions on the ballots. Please speak of the pros and cons of the law being proposed. Say nothing derogatory about those supporting or opposing it, because it's about the law. That law It's about the law, it's not about the people. To hold others in judgment is to open yourself up to being unfairly judged. So you want to look at the merits of the law and not judge with eyes of judgment and a sense of judgment in your heart. Doesn't matter who put it out, who's for it, who's against it. What do you think about it? What effect will it have on your life? So that's what I have to say about voting. That's the way to vote. That's not vote for this, vote for that. That's we teach you what to do when you're voting, not telling you who to vote for. Ernest Holmes is the founder of the religious science movement and the author of the Science of Mind textbook. And he has some wonderful things to say. I'm going to get two of them in here. Since we're talking about tough love, we want to talk about how do we connect with our love, right? So Ernest tells us that prayer is essential to happiness. He says prayer is essential not to the salvation of the soul, for the soul is never lost, but to the conscious well-being of the soul that does not understand itself. The soul that does not understand itself, the one that has been so influenced by outside things and has not come to grips with its own divinity yet. The ones that think that their life path is to be violent or to be awful. He says, prayer is constructive because it enables us to establish closer contact with the fountain of wisdom. And by doing that, we are less likely to be influenced by appearances around us. We're going to be less likely to judge according to appearance. Ernest says, righteous prayer sets the law of the spirit of life in motion for us. Righteous prayer. Righteous is a strange word. What it actually means is morally right or justifiable, virtuous. And so when you say something has to be morally right, my first question is, whose morals? Whose morals are we making it right with? Virtuous. Well, virtuous is a bit easier. It's, you know, for the good of people, places, and things. It's something positive that we experience with and for life. Justifiable is the easiest one for me. Can I justify doing this? Is there good in doing this? And so, yes, there is good in this. We want to pray. We want to set the laws of spirit of life in motion for ourselves and for each other and for these people that we have claimed are tough to love. They're not tough to love. It's what's inside of us that is seeing them as other than the divine. And when I see the news, or when I go online and I get my little clips from people that follow the news, I have to be very careful. I have to do my prayer work before I start watching the news and know that this too shall pass. This is simply an appearance. Behind this is a power greater than me in the universe that I can use. So that pre-prayer, that pre-setup, do you know there's biblical precedent for that? There is. In the book of Matthew, verse 5, chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. Now I'm going to refer to the altar of faith on page 430 in the Science of Mind textbook, but I want to give you a little bit of the background of what the heck is going on with reference to this this Bible verse. So this chapter of Matthew is the same chapter where Jesus is delivering the Beatitudes. Everybody knows what the Beatitudes are? Blessed are the meek. So verse 22, he says, that he's giving this big talk. Lots of people. He's on a mountain. He's talking. Jesus says, "But I say unto you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. And whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of the hell of fire. If therefore thou art offering thy gift at the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift." We want to think about just exactly what is he saying. Well, raca seems to be like a bad word. So in whatever language it is, raca must not be a good thing if I'm supposed to be held in judgment if I say raca to my brother. However, as a joke, I could always do that to my brother next time I call him up. Say, "Hey, Jess, raca." He will take that as rock on because he's a musician. What Jesus is telling us is if you owe your brother an apology, and it's not just your brother, it's anybody, you owe somebody an apology, go ask for forgiveness. If you have a grievance against your brother or somebody else, release your anger and pray for his highest good. Pray that you see your brother as God sees your brother, as one with all good. That's what the biblical verse is saying. Not saying put on hold your offering. It's saying, you know what? You are not giving from your heart. You are not being fully present when you've got this garbage in your heart. When you're sitting around judging or not forgiving or doing things that you know are harmful to others, you're not in the right state to be fully present. So clean up your mess so you can be fully present, so you can appreciate the value of being fully present. So I'm going to read to you this part, "The Altar of Faith" by Ernest Holmes. Jesus tells us that our gifts brought to the altar of life are unacceptable while there is aught between us and our fellow man. Here is a hard saying: we cannot always please our fellow men. Human experience has taught that this is impossible. What attitude, then, are we to assume? This: whether we please or whether we displease, we need have no personal animosity toward others. The altar of faith is approached through peace and goodwill toward all. The divine ear is attuned to harmony and cannot be approached through discord. When we agree with our adversaries quickly, they will disappear, for there can be no reality to us unless we recognize it. But if we recognize that which is false, by our acceptance of it, we shall be delivered to judgment, whereby we ourselves have judged. The utmost farthing must be paid until we no longer indulge in evil doing. So as long as we are going along with this evil, untoward stuff, we are going to continue paying for it. And that's called cause and effect. We put out garbage. The universe says, yes, you believe in garbage. Here's your garbage. Jesus tells us to resist not evil, to love our enemies, and to do good to them who would do us evil. For this is to manifest the spirit of love, which is God. God loves all alike and causes his rain to fall and his sun to shine alike upon all. In arms which are all-inclusive, divine love encompasses everything. Arms that are all-inclusive, divine love encompasses everything. Think about the yin-yang symbol, where it's a circle, and it's kind of got this arc through the middle where one side's black and one side's white. But in each side, it has a circle self-contained of the opposing color. Now, what does that mean? Inclusive. The arms are inclusive. Everything is God. Everything is love. There is no place where God is not, there is no spot where God is not. And all those other things, you know, God is all there is, I am one with God, I know and accept for myself, I accept all my good, I give thanks, and I release. It is scientific, it is powerful, and it is the bottom line truth, that there is only one. We are it. And therefore, all of the things that we desire, that we need, that we hold dear and hold precious and give our attention to, these are the things that are in our life. They just keep showing up in our life. And only when we resist, when we judge, when we decide that's bad, that person is bad. We can say that behavior is unacceptable, but the person doing the behavior is still the presence of God. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't arrest them and put them in jail until they learn how to change their behavior, but it does mean that we can love them while they are being arrested and put in jail to learn how to change their behavior. We aren't judging who they are when we curtail bad behavior. What we are doing is protecting ourselves and others. See, that sounds like a whole nother talk. But basically, everyone is lovable. When we find it tough to love someone, go within, because it's inside of you, it's not them. Behavior can be acceptable or unacceptable, but everyone is part of God. So I thank you for your time, for your attention. Namaste.